Osiris.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome back to Always Almost There, Day After Show Live. We are here today, very exciting to talk about night two at the Cap. I'm here with my good friend, Neil. Hi, Neil.
What's up?
Doing great. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day here in Port Chester. I'm very excited to finally get to go outside in a little while. You know, I've been working today. But I'm ready to head back down, meet up with the people, get ready for night three.
Night three. I don't know how you do it. I would be napping right now.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, you did yesterday.
Yes, I did. That is right.
We did miss you on the recap yesterday, obviously. But, you know, as we told everyone, you were stuck in your shower with no Wi-Fi.
That's right.
So that's the way things go. We've got a guest today as well. I was saying to him before we went live that I think this is our first episode with a guest since like October, because we didn't have guests for Europe and we didn't have guests for Goosemas. So this is very exciting. Without further ado, let's bring him on here. We've got Mr. Chris Newcomb joining us today. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, Chris. Phenomenal. Having a great day. How about you?
Good. Beautiful day here. And I'm back in New York City. So made the trip back last night after the show. So enjoying the nice weather when I can in Brooklyn here, and might even watch the show on the couch outside tonight. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Were you on Sunday as well?
Yeah, I was there Sunday and I was there last night. So
nice.
Got a good flavor for what's going on there so far.
Awesome. Awesome. And Neil, I think you were up, but you stayed awake for the whole show last night?
Did stay awake for the whole show. Watched the whole thing.
Nice. Unlike Vickers. Let's dive in here. We'll hear from you first, Chris. What was your feeling? You know, if you want to talk about Sunday a little bit as well, because, you know, we didn't have any guests on yesterday. But tell us about, you know, where you were in the venue, your experience getting in, what your pre-show vibe was like.
Yeah. So, I mean, Sunday was, I mean, I think like a lot of people, I was pretty blown away just by the amount of jamming, just how like great the jamming was all night on Sunday. So, coming into last night, I was, you know, I was pretty excited, but also intrigued kind of to see if they were going to kind of keep up the same level of intensity. And yeah, so I was, you know, pretty excited for the show, but also wanted to see kind of what it was like. So I got there, you know, not that long before the show started, just enough time to get a beer. And I sidled up on like kind of the left side, Trevor's side, on the floor, a little ways back. It was pretty packed, although not quite as packed as Sunday. Sunday was probably the most packed I've ever seen that venue. So,
wow.
Yeah, but the crowd was pretty excited. And so, you know, I think everyone was pretty much ready to go by the time Dr. Darkness hit. So,
yeah. And it's interesting, you know, not only did we get the whole moon cabin last night, but, you know, we had a couple other references to the eclipse, you know, with the Dr. Darkness opener, which is funny because, you know, obviously many of us were talking yesterday, like they're going to play Silver Rising. It's the obvious choice, you know, for the moon, for the eclipse, whatever. And they didn't. And Dr. Darkness, I think, was a great call just in terms of subverting our expectations of what the Eclipse references were going to be. I personally, I didn't even make the connection, the Darkness reference, until a good friend of the pod, Bob, later in the show, said that to me. And I was like, oh, obviously. but
that also seems to be their song now, though, that like signifies that, like, you know, some sort of shenanigans are afoot. Like, they're going to do something like fun. I think when they lead off the show with that, it's going to be an interesting show.
Sure. I mean, go back to London in November. Peter said they were going to go hard, and then they played Dr. Darkness to open the show. And nothing says going hard like Dr. Darkness. Neil, how are you? How are you feeling pre-show last night?
Pre-show last night, exhausted. Definitely stayed up way too late. Went like way too hard night one. I think anybody who saw me at night one knows that I went way too hard, but had a blast. Really, really good time. And then a 3-hour drive back to Boston first thing in the morning. I just like hopped out of bed and I was like, I'm just going to get this over with and drive it. And then, so still a little bit tired from the night before, and settled into the couch. Then got the stream going. Then promptly turned the stream off and just listened to the audio of the stream. Yeah. Because like there was no actual watching the stream. So, I mean, you guys were lucky that you were there, because that was maddening to even attempt. But
at least the audio was better last night. You know, first night there were some audio issues. Last night there were some video issues. Hopefully tonight, for those of you on the couch, they've got all the kinks worked out. Neil, what were your thoughts, you know, on the Dr. Darkness opener? Did the Eclipse reference occur to you immediately, or were you just thinking they're playing Darkness?
That was the first thing I just like typed in as many group chats as I could. Like, of course it's Dr. Darkness. Like, how could I have not seen that one coming? But
right. I got a big egg in fantasy last night. So
yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking there was just like a whole list of songs that I expected to be played last night. None of them were played. And not related to Fantasy Goose, but just my idea of what Goose was going to come out and do. Like, I really thought Atlas Dogs would have been played in one of the first two shows, and that didn't happen. On those kind of shorter songy songs, I had a short list, and Dr. Darkness was not one of them. I thought maybe Mr. Action. I don't know. I should have seen that one coming.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somehow when I went to the show last night, I completely forgot that Eclipse like took place at all and didn't factor that into my Fantasy Goose or anything else. So I don't know. I don't know how that happened given the events of the day, but yeah, I went in with just a normal show expectation and sort of didn't see any of what ended up happening.
Yeah. All, so. And on that note, I was expecting Silver Rising in some way, because it does mention the moon. Yeah. No Silver Rising. So
yeah. Shout out to Kevin Johnson in the chat, whose wife Elise is currently number one in Fantasy Goose. And yes, not anyone on this pod. That is true. But there were eggs all around last night. Evdude, Legvold, all saying we got eggs. So hopefully we can redeem ourselves tonight. I know we usually save the fantasy talk for later in the show, but we're kind of on this now. But putting my picks together today, also, I'm like, there are so many songs now that like, you feel like they have to play, but there's only two nights left. And there are going to be so many songs that like, you'd think like, oh, it's a 4-night run. Like Goose has to play, you know, all of their amazing songs. And there are too many to fit in that. And I'm appreciative that we are two shows in and we have heard one cover song, which is awesome. You know, shout out to all the people on the internet, you know, who think Goose doesn't have enough songs to play 4 nights, no repeats. It's amazing. Similar last year at the Cap, I think there were only 3 cover songs the whole run, something like that. Only a few. So it's great to see them doing that again and giving us, personally, I would rather hear all Goose originals this run than covers. Save the covers for summer tour.
Yeah. Well, just picking up on that thread, major jam vehicles, right? When you think of Goose and you think of major jam vehicles, what are the songs that come to mind? All I Need, right?
Yep.
Stereo Lane.
Yep.
Matavon, Arrow to some degree or another, right?
Thatch.
So
yeah,
Thatch. So those are like the 5 biggies, right? You know, like the only one that really has been taken off of that list is Drive. Yep. So I mean, this is something they're really extending the catalog. I mean, I guess that kind of does happen when, you know, what we're about to talk about happens.
Yes.
And you go play an album that's like what, 7 or 8 years old, you know, all the way through. But that to me is crazy. to think about Goose playing a four-night run. Here we are going into night three, and we haven't heard any of those kind of big five, right? That's
something. Well, I mean, that could be, I think, kind of the fun of Connor too, is it seems like, or Connor too, they're going to start opening up jams and other non-traditional jam vehicles, which ended up happening, you know, at least once in this show. So,
yeah.
So I think that could be a whole new sort of thing. And I think it's also kind of cool. I mean, I've living in New York, obviously we see a lot of, you know, four night fish runs, and it's sometimes it's a little bit annoying in the last night because they're just trying to fit everything in. So I think it's hopefully refreshing that Goose maybe doesn't feel the need to necessarily jam every single jam vehicle into every single run. Like for instance, in, you know, over Goosemas, they didn't play Thatch at all, which I think a lot of people were surprised by, but it's kind of nice that they can
leave
out and still play great shows. So
yeah. Similar to what Neil said, like, yeah, they, over those two nights, you know, I was expecting to see, like, they're going to play Thatch again, they're going to play Madhavan, you know, but yeah, we didn't see any of those tunes, which was really cool. And last night, you know, speaking of the jamming, which we'll get to, but there was so much patience in last night. You know, it last night, a lot of the jams lacked the depth that we saw on night one. You know, nothing went as deep as Drive, Pancakes, or Everything Must Go, in my opinion, but there was so much patience exhibited by them, which we saw start happening on Sunday. And that's also a testament to, they're a little more comfortable now. It's show number two. You know, first night was that we talked about yesterday, that release, that catharsis, we're getting it all out there, we're back on stage. And last night was more, all right, let's see what we can do a little differently here. And it was cool, you know, shout out to the people on Twitter that called the Moon Cabin early in the show, but it was interesting. Like, you know, they start Turn Clouds, the second song of the show, which is not a placement you see for that song at all. Which is crazy. Usually a set closer, you know, late set one, set two cool down. But it's been a while since we saw a Clouds in this spot. So how are you feeling when they started that, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, that I felt the same way, that sort of, it wasn't really where you normally see that song these days. I think maybe back in the day, they played it a little bit more in that spot, but yeah, it was, but it does make sense. I mean, it is a good sort of warm up. I feel like the, you know, both these nights, they're kind of giving Cotter a couple warm up songs to start to sort of get him into the vibe of the show. So I think it made sense to me in that placement. But then it was really when they sort of went to Miss that I was, you know, like, oh, what's going on here? This is definitely not what I was expecting at this spot. So.
Mm-hmm. Similar thoughts. When they played Turn Clouds, it was like, this is weird.
Yeah.
And that should have been the first tip off that something was happening.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I gotta be honest. I don't think I would have even noticed that they were playing Moon Cabin all the way through until they got to like Indian River. And then yeah, I would have been like, like something is going on here. But I like have to be honest, the number of listens that I have of Moon Cabin in the last 2-3 years is pretty darn low. Like when I first started listening to the band, definitely listen to it like a bunch, but and then also think actually that recording of Turn Clouds is spectacular. It's so good. But in any case, I don't go back to Studio Goose because I don't really listen to Goose on like Spotify streaming services. Yeah. I just listen to Nugs, you know. Yeah. So yeah, I wouldn't have known. I have to admit my ignorance there. That was pretty clever. Whoever the first person was to pick up on that, Jess Metz from Ben Flock was the one that I noticed on Twitter who posted about it. And I was like, good for you. I wouldn't have gotten it. I just have to admit it.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, when they started playing Turn Clouds, I was like, this is strange, but this is kind of what I've been expecting from 2024 Goose. Like things are now different, right? Jamming styles feel a little bit different. Sets feel a little bit different. You know, they came out the gate yesterday and played an amazing show with a lot of things we weren't expecting. So this was like just, you know, another thing that was like unexpected. All right, Turn Clouds on the two spot. Why not?
Yeah, and then we get the magic third song of the show. I'm curious if that trend continues tonight, but we had the Drive on Sunday, and last night they just opened Into the Mist up like we've never heard this song before. This is the first like truly jammed out version of this song ever, I think, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I mean, I don't know. Like you can go back and I think you can hear different variations on the song. It's the only one that's 27 minutes. I can say that pretty strongly.
Like, I think the one in Milwaukee last year kind of went into like that weird sort of like Eastern vibe.
Just disco.
But yeah, nothing like this. I mean, when they dropped into the jam, it was just completely open space and they just kind of went. So, which is definitely not what they normally do.
Yeah. And interesting to note, Peter was playing synth on the chorus instead of organ for the first time ever. Really interesting that sequential OB6 on top of the vintage vibe there got some great usage last night. It's interesting, you know, I didn't think about it until today. And, you know, I was talking to someone and it was like, there's a lot of keyboard solos on Moon Cabin. And, you know, Peter mixed up some of the parts. I think the synth on Mist was a purposeful decision, you know, something that will stick in the future. I like the way it sounded. But you know, later in the show, we'll talk about some of the different choices he made for keyboard solos than he normally has. But this Mist was incredible. Just joy and patient joy. It, you know, it's a singular idea. It's interesting throughout its 27 minutes. And it was unbelievable. The energy in the room and the outpouring of happiness from the crowd and the band throughout the whole thing was just incredible. And I think it means we have to revise our list of acceptable instances for an unfinished Mist.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely am glad they didn't try to like jam back into the Mist from where they got to. It seemed like at one point they were kind of trying to maybe turn it back.
Yeah.
But then they kind of just gave up and they're just like, no, we'll just go and take it to sort of, you know, the heaven that it ultimately went to. So the one part I really loved in this, which was a good crowd moment, was at one point Rick hit like a turn. Like towards the peak, he had a turn on the guitar that sounded like Katy Perry's like California Girls. It's an awesome lick and everyone kind of responds to it. And then he kind of like takes off from there.
Nice. Neil, yeah, what do you got?
I mean, excellent version. When it was happening last night, I just couldn't believe it. Again, picking up on the thread that I started on earlier, we were expecting different things from 2024 Goose. So when this started happening, I was like, all right, here we go. So we're getting a really fresh take on a song that had just become pedestrian at this point, right? Yeah. There's always kind of like a little bit of jam and Mist, you know, but it's not really like a jam.
And with all the unfinished lane.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know what you're going to get when they start playing it. And generally to me, that means like, we're not exploring anything here. This is going to be fun. You know, if you're at the show, it's a good one to dance to, but it's also, it's not going to go to the places that Matavon would traditionally go to, or Wisteria Lane would traditionally go to, until it did, you know. I mean, it didn't get out there like super out there. You hit the nail on the head. It's a central idea that kind of stayed throughout. And we're going to wear out the word patience when we talk about this band now. I'm sure you used it a lot yesterday on the pod. We're going to use it a lot today. This is a good example. And it's more than just patience. It's like a little bit of bravery, it's a little bit of courage to just sit there and do it and not quit, mm-hmm. you know, because Rick easily at any given point could have done that thing where it's just like open strings and then like peak and then you're out. Right.
We'll talk about that later in the show.
Yeah. Right. He didn't end this and allowed it to breathe and allowed it to go to the places that it just could have gone to. There was no rush. And that kind of jamming is what I love about Goose. When they have the courage, just let it ride. You know, let's just do this thing.
I feel like when they're not forcing it, it like, you know, that's when they're sort of letting it happen, like enough stuff's gonna happen if they let it happen. So mm-hmm. like when they're not forcing it,
when the music just flows out of them.
Don't worry, you know, just play. That's my message to Goose right now. Just there let it go. Happen. You know, don't worry if like we're gonna be bored. Like just, you know, 27 minute Mist, do it every time. It. I assure you, I won't be mad.
I will never hear from Mist too,
because Mist is like one of the like that's one of the jams they have with like the least like the most untapped potential. Like you always felt like that was one of the ones where like it could be so many things, and it never really was. So I think the idea that they're sort of re-examining like some of their songs from that perspective is really encouraging.
Sure,
right, and that's the counter influence, right? We've been talking about that for a while. Like, what's going to look different? What's going to sound different as this band learns new songs with this new guy, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think right there you immediately just got this fresh take.
Yeah.
So stoked on this group.
And then speaking of patience, this Arcadia that comes next. Yeah. Again, not thinking about Moon Cabin, but I was like, wow, mid first set Arcadia after Mist and Cloud. Like, I was just like, this is cool. We're changing up the placement of things. And I hope that, you know, seeing how the placement of these songs really worked, like in the middle of the first set, I hope that we see, like, you know, in June, like, throw us a mid first set Arcadia, throw us a, you know, mid first set Mist. Just cause, why not?
Yeah,
and well, it changes how the audience, I think, you know, accepts it too, right? Like when you're at the end of a show and there's like Arcadia, then you just are sort of anticipating the end and you're sure. You're kind of thinking ahead to like what's almost like what's next. I mean, you're enjoying it, but I think having it in a different spot gives you a whole new perspective on sort of how the jam works. So
yeah, this one reminded me a lot of the 2:10:22 version from Madison. Not only because it had a Trevor bass solo at the beginning, which was sick. But just because it was around, I think it was 20, 21 minutes long, and it doesn't really go outside Arcadia. It's just a super patient build. We're saying it over and over. New drinking game for today's pod. Drink every time we say patience. But they just kept going. We get a nice shout out to my good friend Dylan, who caught the Nebula tease from Rick from TED Tapes 24 in that jam. Really cool to see. Little riff from that pop up. Clav's sounding real good right now.
I mean, well, you know what sounds really good, man, is a jammed out Arcadia.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a while, and we've been talking a lot about Arcadias lately. Vickers started a whole thread on Twitter about 2021 Arcadias, and there were so many good ones. You know, not just the few that we've, you know, beaten to death talking about, but so many. And the band just, you know, consistently jammed that song. And then that kind of stopped. It hasn't really gotten the big jammed out treatment in a while, at least in my opinion. And then we got this thing and it's just like, oh, so good. It's so good when they do it, you know? And, but the slow funk Arcadia, I mean, that's something, man. It was really good. I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, it was excellent. What were your thoughts on it, Chris?
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought the crowd was loving it too. I mean, I thought it was, I also like, you know, they definitely made sort of a full build, and then they did the thing where they drop back down, which seems to be sort of the modern way they do Arcadia, where they sort of reset and then go back up again. But yeah, the crowd was eating it up. I thought it was really fun. And again, I think you guys mentioned it before. I like how with this one, and they did it later on too, where they kind of let Trevor sort of lead off with a little bit of almost a bass solo to start it off, and then take off from there. I think that's a pretty cool way to do it.
Trevor bass. That was the only thing missing from last night's show. Nobody did that at any point.
And except they should have. Right?
I did it a number of times.
So many opportunities.
Yeah, but yeah, this Arcadia was awesome. Good, as you said, great energy from the crowd, as always with this song. You know, people know the words. And there's nothing like the energy of that peak, you know, especially that obviously Arcadia has always had a special significance to Goose, but also it being the last song they played with Ben at Goosemas. So seeing it pop up again here, kind of a little bit of extra significance, but it was incredible. And I loved it. And then we get Lead the Way to close the set. Interesting to note, first time ever Peter has played only keys on the song. You know, last couple of years, he's been switching to keys for the jam, you know, sticking to guitar for the song portion like he used to. But last night was just 100% keys. So interesting there. Nothing crazy in this Lead the Way. Love the song. I'll say, I think the drums weren't perfect on this one, I felt. You know, people were talking like missing a little bit of the swing, I think, which is interesting because that's one of the things that Cotter has been so good at already. But
yeah, the jam felt a little more like rocky, I guess, like more rock oriented than sort of sometimes it feels a little more ethereal. So
sure.
But I didn't mind it. I mean, I thought it sounded good. I thought it was a good version. So
yeah,
man, I love Lead the Way. It's great as a set one closer, a little weird, right? But that's what happens when you're playing an album all the way
and
through.
It wasn't supposed to be. I think they played Mist and Arcadia a little bit longer than they were anticipating. They on the written set list, they were going to do the first interlude in Indian River with Delta to close the set. Kudos to Goose on cutting the Delta. That was
not doing that. Yeah, I was just going to say.
And now by the American Woman rule, because we said that, they're going to play a standalone Delta jam tonight.
Delta opener.
But it was great. And then the interludes blew me away. You know, coming out of set break, you know, I didn't realize it until the second one, you know, the intro to Jive One. And I was like, oh, this is what they're doing. So yeah. I apologize to anybody who was following the setlist thread, who's confused why Interlude One didn't make it in, but Interlude Two and Interlude Three did. It's because I didn't know that Interlude One was a thing. And then I remembered.
But, I mean, it sounds a lot like actual Indian River, so it's hard to distinguish where one begins and one ends, but that's tracking. So.
Yeah, the interludes are just a jam on the beginning of the song, which, well, you know, this one wasn't my favorite of the three, still really good. And this is like, you know, more OG Indian River, not the 80s synth version, but I thought it was a fantastic way to open the set.
That was going to be my question to you is which version is this?
I was thinking about it. I was like, I gave it no footnote. I think it's this is an OG Indian River. Okay. No footnote.
Would have loved to have run that. You know, which of the seven versions is this by somebody in the band? But
yeah, it's like the traditional reggae version, right? Which I think fits this song best, quite frankly, personally. I think I like this the way they do it this way. It just goes with like the lyrics better, I think. But they've pretty much de-reggae-fied their catalog over the last 2 years. Yeah. So
for a reason. Shout out to the December 2019 Doobie song that Neil loves so much.
So good. Featuring Mahali.
That's really
whatever something. That was. Yeah.
And it's interesting. I don't know how you felt going into the second set, Chris and Neil, but for me, once I knew they were doing Moon Cabin, I kind of adjusted my expectations accordingly. I think if I didn't know and they did, you know, Indian River, Jive One, and Jive Two in the set all without jams, I would have been like, okay, a little bit disappointing. But since we knew we were getting Moon Cabin, I was like, all right, I know they're probably going to jam out Rosewood here. You know, I was thinking maybe, and I'm curious if they had thrown around the idea if they needed to fill more time of doing the Jive Two third jam, which we haven't seen since 2021. I was kind of thinking that as that song was wrapping up. But I thought, I mean, the execution was great. But yeah, I adjusted my expectations going into the set because of knowing what was going to come. Chris, how did you feel going into the set?
Yeah, and I thought they did a good job of almost like playing with the expectations, right? I think the interludes did a great job of like, you know, at least, you know, the people who were clued in on the Moon Cab, which I'm not really sure how many people actually in the crowd sort of got it, like knew it was coming. But, you know, like when the interlude into Jive One, like I thought that the way they played that out was kind of like almost teasing of when they finally dropped into it. So I thought that was really a cool way to experience a show. And I guess, you know, I'm trying to think of other shows I've experienced like that where you kind of knew they were going to play like a whole album or something. I mean, I actually just went to the Disco Biscuits album release party last week where you kind of had that too, where you sort of know where the jam's going. But like, you know, sometimes knowing and then seeing how they play into that is kind of even more fun to see.
Sure. Neil, what about you?
Is this the part where we talk about the interlude before Jive One? Because I want to talk about that for a while.
Yeah, go ahead. Talk about it.
Oh, man, it's so good. I mean, it's not just like a jam on an intro to the tune. I hope that sticks to Jive One for a little while, just like the bonus jam stuck on the Jive Two, well, for two versions in 2021. But it was only two, right? We're talking about Swansea and we're talking about the Caverns.
Yes.
There wasn't a third one, right?
No.
There was no more bonus jam than that. But yes, I, like you, was thinking maybe we get a bonus jam in here on Jive 2. So that's cool. But
we're in Jive 1 right now.
I know. I'm backing up to Jive 1. I'm backing up. Don't worry.
All right.
Stay with me. I got this. So yes, the interlude leading into Jive 1 was, I don't know, it was so cool. And to me, I was hearing like Pink Floyd vibes like all the way through. And I was like, holy crap, like what are they gonna do here?
Brad sent that message at the exact moment those words left your mouth. That is amazing. For those of you listening after the fact who can't see, Brad Solari at the exact same time Neil said Pink Floyd, said massive Pink Floyd eclipse vibes in interlude two. That's awesome.
I don't have the musical vocabulary to describe what was happening there, but it, you know. When you listen to Breathe by Pink Floyd, it's got that kind of, I think it's like an EA chord progression. It's just two chords and alternate between the two. And they were doing that. And then there was kind of like a third note, which is a note right out of like the, you know, the out of Jive One, that distinctive note that makes like Jive One, Jive One.
Yeah.
And it sounded so fucking cool, man. It was just like, it's like Pink Floyd, Jive One, Pink Floyd, yeah. Jive One. I mean, that little jam, I, it was the most memorable part of the night for me. And it wasn't even, you know, the best jam, but it was just so damn awesome. Cool and creative what they did. Yeah.
Yeah. And it reminded me a lot of the 10.9.21 version where they did a very similar thing, obviously not tracked as interlude, but segueing out of White Lights, they got into that, you know, those opening chords that Rick does usually on his own in Jive One, but instead of just playing it and jumping into the song, they jammed on that progression for a couple of minutes. And so everyone should go check out that White Lights Jive One. Really incredible segue. Really cool thing that you'll see the parallels between that and what they did last night here. Chris, what did you think of the second interlude?
Yeah, no, I just thought it was, I was personally anticipating when they dropped into Jive One, and the way the Jive One, you know, they normally go into it, it's basically they sort of do the build and then they kind of drop into it. So I thought it was kind of cool how they kind of almost like were repeatedly doing that build, but within the context of a jam. And then finally when it hit, it was cool. Yeah. So I was a big fan of that whole process.
Yeah, every and time, please, like, don't throw that one away. Let's keep that around for
24. For both jives, I think both jives should come with the interludes more often than not.
Yeah.
I think it's too good not to. Like, make them part of the regular catalog, please. And Peter took his solo on the OB6 here. The organ. Yeah. We had an excellent synth solo. I love that he's got a really great lead tone dialed in there. It's like very, very, it's like shimmery. You know, it feels very like futuristic. Like, obviously, yeah. It's a synth, so it does, but it feels like an especially futuristic one. You know, his other, like his older Prophet that he had last year kind of had a cleaner lead sound to it. And this one sounds a little more futuristic to me.
That one was popular with the crowd. Like, the crowd heard that and they kind of like lit up. And I agree with like the way that like he needs to mix up the feels when he has like a lot of solos like he had in that set. I think, yeah, this was definitely a good change of pace there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've said this on this podcast before. Peter has a way that synth tone was so close to being just cheesy and bad. It was, you know, he's just like right on the edge. And Peter has a way of playing the synth that just comes so close to that line, but still sounding awesome. I've said it before, the synth is a dangerous instrument. You can put it in the hands of somebody who's an excellent keyboardist, and they can make a solo sound terrible.
Yeah.
Because it sounds so damn cheesy sometimes. And this one, like I said, is just like right on the edge of that, but still sounded so cool. It fit perfectly. I don't know how he does it, but he's always like, those synth solos just always sound great. And then last night, obviously, it was very unique, as you pointed out. And that one stuck out to me, too. I was like, this is pretty dope. So once again, Peter does it. He just finds those synth tones that are just, they're great.
Yeah.
And then it was also just cool to hear a Jive One in the second set, which is definitely not a place where you normally hear it. So it's just like another change of pace where I think I looked it up earlier, and the last time they played Jive One in the second set was in Dallas in 21 with the Jivefecta there. So just cool to see it in a completely different context than you normally see it.
Two nights, two things that last happened in Dallas after Eminence Front on Sunday. And then we get our big tentpole jam of the set here, this Rosewood. It's an amazing jam. I will say that. I have been in the group chats since yesterday. I have been a little bit harsh on this Rosewood. Just for my money, at least for 25 minutes, I feel like the Mist and the Arcadia were better examples of stretching out one idea for a really long time. This Rosewood is amazing. I will definitely be going back to listen to it. But from, you know, my Thief of Joy hat, where I'm ranking things and being, you know, annoying about it, it's probably not going to end up super high on my playlist come year's end. But it was phenomenal in the room. You know, the way that the jam started at the beginning, and like all of them were just kind of luxuriating in the space at the beginning of the Rosewood. You know, Peter was kind of looking around the room. They were all just basking in that moment. And it was really, really cool. Chris, how did you feel about this Rosewood?
Yeah, no, I think I'm kind of with you in the sense I like the opening part where sort of they kind of drop into the jam and it's very like laid back. Peter's got sort of like a marimba sound going, which kind of made the whole thing feel like it had a lot of movement. It almost like three percussionists underneath the Rick playing sort of lines over the top. I just love that portion of it. And then, I think once it sort of goes on for a while and they kind of thicken it up a little bit, then I think it kind of loses steam and direction a little bit. And then they kind of went into like towards the end, they go into the kind of more dissonant stuff to try to change the pace. But I think like that first 10 minutes of the jam where they were just sort of Rick just playing over the top of that like percussion-y sound was awesome.
Yeah, man, I can listen to them do that like forever. So you can call it what you want. You can call it type one. You can call it type 1.5. I think friend of the pod, Brian Brinkman, called it that last night. It still sounds really good. I don't know. Like, I really like this Rosewood. I agree with your point, Ryan. This is not Jam of the Year stuff. And I also think that's okay. I think it is a little rough when you kind of zoom out a little bit. You look at that set after that first set where you get a totally unexpected, very good jam. And then you don't really get the, you know, the oomph that you were expecting, right? That like seemed that like they were on fire, but they had a theme that they were sticking to. I don't know if Rosewood really is like an anchor jam in a set. Like it almost needs to be paired.
It can be. It depends on the type of Rosewood, right? Like a Madhavan could end up not being the right pick to anchor a set if the improv doesn't go in the best possible direction, right? So it's. I feel like it's less about the song and it's more about how the improv kind of affects the flow and the energy in the room. And to me, last night was like, you know, they were doing the album. It felt like a Saturday night show. Obviously it was a Monday night, but you know, we hear the term Saturday night special, describing just like, we're having a good time. You know, you're not getting the same kind of depth of improv that you're getting, maybe on another night, like, you know, that we saw on Sunday. But the energy is there. The vibe is there. The playing is tight. The playing is patient and we were all having an amazing time. So I think that that's really the takeaway from this Rosewood.
But it's gorgeous jamming. And then to just underscore Chris's point, what at the end there, the dissonant stuff, when that started happening, I was like, okay, if I had more of that, then I would have felt like this jam did what it like really needed to do in a second set. But, you know, taking it out of the show and just, you know, as a singular piece of music, very good. Good stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, for what it's worth, the crowd responded well to like, sort of the last like 5 minutes where, you know, Rick was just kind of doing his like, you know, like louder going off thing. Like, I think, you know, that was playing pretty well with the crowd. So, you know, you got to take it from the live perspective as well, I guess, to there where the crowd sort of was ready for a peak there. So they kind of just like peaked it, even if it wasn't the most naturally built peak. So.
Sure. Yeah. And Matt, you're going to laugh at me in the chat. It reminded me of the Ryman one from last year. You know, we have those little dissonant builds that are really, really cool. And then Rick does his open strings, you know, back into the final peak, which was a great conclusion.
That one was kind of a bummer.
But like, I also kind of figured, I think we know at this point when they start doing a build like that, it's going to be really cool for around 30 to 45 seconds. And they might do it a second time. But that's not like that's not a jam space where they are currently exploring for a long time, if that makes sense. Right. Well, they're using that as the tension.
That's the level up for Goose, right? Is they find a way to exit that jam gracefully instead of just kind of pulling the ripcord on it, because it's like, we've done everything we can with this thing. There's no good way out of this. So let's just like pull ourselves out of it as fast as we can and then get back to the song. Right.
Well, that's why for me, it was refreshing with the mist in set one, where they like, we're just like, we're just done with this. We're not going to try to like find a way back to like cram it back into this. We're just going to move on. And like, that's, you know, that's good enough. So.
Yeah, there we go. All right. And next, my favorite part of everything that happened last night, was interlude 3. I think, you know, Neil, you love number 2. This is the Clav interlude. The tone that Peter had on that thing,
so good.
Intel has said, that he has a new preamp, on the Clav, made by Vintage Vibe, which also comes, if anyone thought, if you're like me and you're a huge nerd and you thought, it sounds like Peter has an envelope filter on the Clav instead of just a wah pedal, you would be correct. The new preamp has a really cool envelope filter, which he did use in this Jive 2. But I loved what they were laying down on the intro. Again, both jives should be coming with these interludes, please. I really hope this is not a one-time thing. Yeah, there were a bunch of collab tweets in this show. And this was an amazing, amazing moment. I was so excited about it. Chris, how did you feel about this interlude into Jive 2?
Yeah, no, I thought it was great too. I mean, I think it was, you know, again, anticipating Jive 2 coming in, but then having this sort of, you know, piece of music in front of it. I thought it was, yeah, I don't really have much to add other than that. I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was, you know, where it was in the set coming after the big Rosewood, I thought it was a really nice spot for it. Mm-hmm.
So this is a good part to talk about tone. And I'll start by talking about the clav tone. But the clav sounded so good last night.
So good.
So when Peter switched, I mean, not only did the clav sound good, Peter's playing on the clav sounded really good. And I have noticed that Peter does not wear out the clav like he used to, right? So when he actually does get on that thing, you're like, hell yeah.
Yeah. Like, it hits harder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. It sounds better. It hits harder. You're more excited when you hear it. And
not that I need help being excited about
yeah
that.
Well, I mean, too, but I mean the rest of us normal folks,
sure. You're not normal, Neil.
Yeah, I know, but so my point is his playing has also improved. It's not just that he's just like hammering away at the clav and it like sounds like funky and whatever, and also the tone just sounded different, better. Like it just was a little bit better than it historically has been. And side note, when he switched to the organ, I was sad. It like in comparison, like actually next to each other, juxtaposed, it was jarring, the switch when he sure. jumped from the clav to the organ, if only because on the stream, I think the organ just wasn't nearly as loud as the clav.
Got it.
But I did notice that the playing was really, really good. And then this is a good point to really just mention in general, and you probably talked about this yesterday, but I wasn't on. So I'm gonna use this opportunity to talk about it. Everybody just sounds different, right? Rick sounds different.
I think, Peter, I mean, we're, by the looks hearing, of it, Trevor's got new speakers, it looks like
so, giant caps.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, Rick's using effects that I haven't really heard before. We didn't mention like that tremolo effect that happened at Arcadia.
Yes, thank you for remembering like, that. That was insane. So cool.
That was yeah. just like, just go, dude. Like, I don't even care. Like, I, you know, I've heard the pedal before, but like,
yeah.
use that more. So, yeah, it seems like everybody kind of in the last 6 months of bought new toys and have done their homework, and that's exciting stuff. The band is improving their sound while they're off, and it's nice to pick up on these things early on the tour. And looking forward to some more clav playing, because it sounds better than it ever has, in my opinion.
Me both. It's I guess it's that preamp, whatever it's doing there, it's doing something right.
Yeah,
and I mean Jive 2 is just great. It felt like another patient build. Rick's tone just still so good. These Fender amps, there's a reason that they're so popular.
Yeah, I mean, well, it, there's just like other things going at play here. I'm sure there's different stuff going on with his guitar.
Yep.
You know, somebody should sit down and talk to him about his rig.
I wonder point. If we do we know anyone who does anything like that?
I don't know. Should find a guy.
We should. And then we reach the end of Moon Cabin here, and obviously I think, you know, they kind of had to do it here. Get the Lee wasn't on the album, but you got to have the Lee to close the set here. Shout out to Bob. It was his first Lee, like 30 something shows. And it was his first Lee last night. So that was very exciting. And this was a fun Lee again, like type one, but the, you know, amazing drum break, you know, Trevor crushing it. But I loved when they just let Cotter and Jeff rip for a little while. On that, but that groove that Cotter was laying down, it was so busy, yet like you could hear exactly what he was doing, very articulate, and I loved the way that he crafted that for the week.
Yeah, the band was clearly having a ton of fun. Especially, I mean, the one thing I really remember from this jam was at one point they had these new smoke machines that are overhead now.
Yeah,
and at one point Peter was like asking for more smoke. And they didn't give it to him, but then later on in Hot Tea, they basically opened him up completely and like basically cascaded down this huge puff of smoke that like obscured the band for like 20 whole seconds. It was like hilarious.
Yeah,
there was a lot of smoke talk on the stream last night. It was it was a talking point.
There was a lot of smoke happening. I forgot.
Well, Eddie historically has just pumped the building filled with smoke.
Yeah.
He loves the smoke machine.
Yeah.
I just like remember at South Farms, like way back when they were about to do like the laser slow ready.
Oh yeah.
The amount of smoke that was coming off the stage, my brother and I were standing there in our pod and like, you can see it all happening because we were in like pods back then. And it was just laughable. Like, and last night reminded me of that. Yeah. It's just like, how are they even doing this? Like, it's gotta be bad for you. But
yeah,
a lot of smoke.
And then to close out the show, shout out Jive Goose, encore that shit. We get the hot tea, you know, a fitting conclusion for the Saturday night special show and the Moon Cabin show. You know, it was the party vibe. And I mean, this is the encore you want for the party vibe. More amazing collab work from Peter, of course. I think Peter was my personal MVP of last night. Really amazing playing, as we said. But yeah, just great way to end the night. Vibes were high. A lot of fun. Chris, what did you think of the encore?
Yeah, no, I thought it was appropriate. I mean, for me, I was, you know, at that point, you know, being kind of an old guy who'd been there two nights in a row, I was pretty much ready to hit the road. So I think it was like the perfect, like, you know, enough energy, like a nice sort of perfunctory way to end it and then, you know, get out the door. So I thought it was a really good, you know, a good choice, and everyone seemed to be loving it. So.
Yeah. How was the balcony there? Was the balcony bouncing for the
Yeah. So or? I didn't feel it move. Did you feel it move on Sunday night?
No.
Cause I was going to say, I did not feel it move at all. And then early on in the first set last night, I think it was like in the first song, it was like, you know, and I was like, whoa, you know, you expect that when you go to somewhere like MSG, but I had never experienced that at the Cap. So it was really cool last night to experience that again.
Although, you know, to be honest, don't love it when it happens at MSG too. That still scares me every damn time. So,
I mean, I was, it was a little like after I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I was kind of like, okay, wait, do we need to be worried?
like you kind of have a suspicion the building's going to hold together. The Cap, like, who knows?
Anything can happen. Who knows? Maybe Thatch will bring down the balcony. But hopefully, I'm really hopeful that we get that tonight. But whatever we get tonight, it's gonna be sick. Any final thoughts, Chris, before we wrap up here?
No, not really. I mean, I was just, you know, grateful to be there for the two nights. I thought that, you know, good crowds, knowledgeable crowds, and just overall, it was great to see the band seemingly having a lot of fun and exploring new stuff. So I'm super excited for the next couple nights to see what they do, even though I won't be there.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, we are 4 hours away from tonight's show. For those who may have missed it, Borfs are in for last night due to the ongoing audio issues from the first night's stuff. Those soundboards will be in later this week once Peter has the opportunity to do a full mix. And I'm ready to see Goose again tonight. I'm really excited. You know, sad now that you and Dee are both gone, Neil. Gonna miss you guys, but we will be back tomorrow. Good question from Wisteria Lane, Kyle. Do we get a full play of Autumn Crossing now that they've pulled off Moon Cabin? I would say, based on what's been happening, it's definitely on the table.
Yeah, and I do know for a fact that, you know, the band is acutely aware of the signs that are posted around the building right now.
Yes.
that might move their hand a little bit. You know, you just don't know.
You never know. Wait, there's a lot of time, and you know, Cotter clearly has learned all the material very, very well. So I don't think there's one of the things we talked about was, are we going to see less songs? You know, I figured this run maybe there would be more covers that Cotter was familiar with, you know, easing him in, not playing as many songs. But he seems to have a really amazing handle on all of these Goose originals already, which is great. So without further ado, I'm going to go outside and enjoy this beautiful weather and go meet up with some people. But we will be back here tomorrow at 3:30 Eastern for an episode of Always Almost Megan. It's going to be great. Chris.
Yes. That's exciting stuff.
It is. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on. Thank you for being our first guest in 6 months. It was lovely.
Thanks for having me. Great chatting with you guys about music, and looking forward to watching tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you. And everybody, whether you're at the show or on the couch, have an amazing, amazing time tonight. We will see you back here tomorrow.
Hi, this is Henry Kay, host of the number one music history podcast, Rootsland. Come with me on a journey to Kingston, Jamaica, where we explore the world of reggae music and the untold stories of some of the genre's greatest legends. From the ghettos and tenement yards where the music was born, to the island's iconic recording studios. We are so excited to team up with Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music, because as you'll hear, sometimes the story is the best song.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.